Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I am your host, Paul Gannon. For the next hour, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And of course, you will get a heavy dose of my opinion. And if you have an opinion, the number to call is 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. And you can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. That's blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. And you can send email messages to the show at goforit.gan@gmail.com. That's goforit.gan@gmail.com. Well, hope everybody had a great day. Hope you had a good day. Now it's time to sit here and relax and listen and talk some sports. Expected to be joined by 154-pound, 160-pound contender, boxing contender Ishii Smith. Ishii will talk about his last fight against Fernando Guerrero. We're also expected to be joined by former Eagles tight end Luther Broughton, who will give us some insight on how it is to be a collegiate athlete and talk about this Reggie Bush situation. If you haven't heard, or Reggie Bush, the University of Southern California, USC, has returned his Heisman Trophy. So no longer when you go into one of the halls there at USC, his Heisman is gone. It's missing. It's taken. It's sent back. They got rid of it. And when it comes to that type of situation, when it comes to the NCAA, and when it comes to guys returning individuals' Heismans, it, to me, it's just ridiculous. And all of it stems from Reggie Bush allegedly taking over $100,000 from an agent while he was at USC. Because of that, USC was forced to vacate. They lost lots of scholarships. They have a 2-year bowl ban, 4 years of probation. I mean, they pretty much lost their 2004 national championship, which Bush was a member of. And they lost a lot, and they're losing a lot of big-time athletes right now coming out of high school. Many are not signing with USC because they can't play in a bowl game. And they just replaced their athletic director, Mike Garrett, and they replaced him with Pat Hayden, a former quarterback for USC, former Rams quarterback, and last he was a television commentator. So they made this replacement, and they returned Reggie Bush's Heisman, and they also had a statement, a funny statement, actually. You may laugh, because I sure did. USC president-elect Max Nikias ordered the removal of sports references to basketball player O.J. Mayo, and who also was involved in scandal at USC, and football star Reggie Bush. And here's what was Nikias' comments. I'm going to have a hard time getting through this without laughing, and I hope maybe you'll get a laugh out of it as well. But his comments were, I have instructed the senior vice president for administration to remove athletic jerseys and murals displayed in recognition of O.J. Mayo and Reggie Bush by mid-August. And I'll continue. Our Trojan student-athletes are indeed students first and foremost. Are you kidding me? to take something from Chad Ochocinco, child, please. Child, please. Now everybody is moral and righteous when they get caught. And Reggie Bush, they had to know Reggie Bush was getting something from somewhere. And quite frankly, I don't blame Reggie Bush if he was getting something from somewhere. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, these guys rake in and bring in millions upon millions upon millions of dollars for these universities. I mean, they're bringing tons and tons of money. Now, I don't know if whether they should get paid or if that's the answer, or I'm not sure what it is. But, you know, I mean, it's, something has to be done. Something has to be done. I mean, it's almost like a pimp and prostitute relationship. I mean, the pimp, the prostitute does all the work, and the pimp just puts her in position. That's simply what this is. Okay, USC gives Reggie Bush a scholarship, so Reggie Bush is in position to hopefully succeed and be successful. And after getting that scholarship, they put him on the football field. They give him the platform and everything. They give him the corner. The pimp gives the prostitute the corner. Now that the USC gives Reggie Bush the field, and Reggie Bush goes out and rakes, gets thousands of yards, scores millions, many touchdowns, and in doing so, he brings in tons and tons and tons of money for the university and for the NCAA. Now, to say that, you know, that now that the guy has taken some money and you know, cheated the system, and let's be clear, it's obvious that a lot of guys do it. Everybody, I mean, it's college football, college sports to begin with. It's shady business there. It's shady business. I mean, the coaches are making a bunch of money. The universities are making a bunch of money. The athletic directors are making big money. And the NCAA, it's making big money. And everybody's making money except the guy who was the one who was bringing in all the money. And that are the athletes. That's the athletes. That's the athletes. Those are the guys who are bringing in all the money. Those are the guys who are bringing in everything to the university. And unfortunately, these guys, in a lot of ways, are treated like prostitutes. And it's unfortunate. And now all of a sudden, you know, Reggie Bush, Frank, brought all this money to the university, brought all this money to the NCAA, and all of a sudden, now they're trying to take his Heisman away. USC has taken down all his jerseys, all his records, everything's been wiped away. Everything that he has done is pretty much gone. And now, it's just not right. It's just not right how an individual can do so much for the university. Now, granted, Reggie Bush knew the rules, and he knows that there's certain things you're allowed to do, and certain things you're supposed to do. And he knows that by taking money from an agent, and by allowing the agent to fly your parents around the country, allegedly, the agent set up a house for these guys and everything. I mean, for his parents, and I mean, and they did a lot for his parents and his family and in terms of financial things, in terms of money. They did a lot. They gave him a lot. But the reality of it is this. I mean, Reggie Bush did not come from a lot of money. And, you know, what is a guy to do? He's going off to college, granted, full scholarship and all. But he is on that college campus, and we don't know what kind of his money situation in terms of if his parents can afford to send him any type of money or anything. And it's a tough situation for a guy like that, and it's a tough situation that he was pushed into and forced into in a lot of ways because now he has to abide by the rules of the NCAA. And he is one of the guys who is bringing in tons and tons of money for the NCAA. He's bringing in tons of money for the NCAA. And now, I mean, he decides that he wants to get a little money for himself. And granted, it's not right. It's not right. But by golly, it's okay. We are now joined by former Eagles tight end, Luther Broughton.
Yo.
Friend to the show. Luther, are you there?
I'm here, baby. What's happening?
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. Let's get your initial thoughts. You were a collegiate athlete. Let's get your initial thoughts on the possibility of the NCAA taking away Reggie Bush's Heisman.
I think that, he did whatever he did, took some money, this, that, and the other. But what the hell? That has nothing to do with what he did on the field. I mean, I wanted Vince Young to win it anyways, but that has nothing to do with anything. He earned it on the field. It's not like they found out he was doping for 4 years. He took some money, that killed his eligibility. Of course, it's like the Heisman committee is going to make that decision. Are those guys sitting around thinking?
Double A, but you're right. The Heisman committee.
Yeah, the Heisman committee is making that decision. You got guys up there thinking, man. Those are guys like me and you. They're not the rigid, stupid NCAA committee who would suspend Dez Bryant for freaking eating dinner at Deion Sanders' house.
Right.
But,
those
guys, they may have their hands forced, but hands tied. But I'm sorry. I don't think he should get his Heisman taken away. What does him getting money, I mean, of course, that's illegal if you're in college, blah, blah, blah. And the coaches make millions of dollars.
Right, right.
Go ahead.
And being an athlete, a collegiate athlete yourself, I mean, you had to understand why he would take that type of money from an agent. And
well, I don't understand, actually. I don't understand how he could be that stupid to not know that this is going to get out. You decide to take all this cheddar from this agent or whomever he was. He wasn't an agent. He was a marketing guy. And then you decide to screw the guy and not sign with his marketing firm and not give him his money back. What did Reggie think was going to happen? You can't just screw the guy out of $100,000 and marketing money in terms of what they were going to make commissions off of him and expect to get away with taking all his money. That guy was like, Reggie, you screwed me, now screw you, I'm telling.
And yeah, so, and it was on, actually, it was funny, it was on, I was watching Real Sports, and the guy was on, he basically said that. That's exactly what he said. I mean, he was saying he wouldn't have told on Reggie if Reggie would have just gave him his money back.
Reggie makes so much cheese. You took $100,000 from this guy. You're going to sign. You're the second in pick in the draft. You're making at least $40 million. Give the guy his money back. Save your face. Apologize to the guy. I know you're missing out on a few million dollars by not being my guy, but, have your money back at least. Reggie just says, screw it. Do what you got to do.
But is this type of thing, being a collegiate athlete yourself, is this type of thing, obviously maybe not to the degree of Reggie Bush, but is this type of thing of guys taking money from, maybe not agents, but from other sources, is that common?
I went to Furman. It's not like we were a hotbed out there with all types of stuff going on. But, I got plenty of friends in bigger places. Guys get perks, These guys, these coaches are making millions of dollars. These guys they don't have jobs. They get easy jobs, jobs that they don't really go to. They get, you see these guys coming from, low-income homes, and all of a sudden they're pushing the Benz around campus. They're pushing the Range around campus. Come on, where's that coming from? you know that's right. not coming from a legal source. So yeah, guys get stuff. You know, I'd go on other campuses when I played or whatever, and I'd see the ball players driving this, driving that, always having money, this, that, and the other. Hey, I can't say that they didn't get it legally, but you know, where there's smoke,
there's probably a ton of fire, lots of fire.
Yeah.
But I mean, you talked about the situation where, and now you got the situation with Florida where the center Marquise Pouncey allegedly took $100,000 from an agent, and you have all these things coming out. Like, this has been going on for a long time. How all of a sudden all these things are just starting to come out now? I'm talking about how everybody's doing something illegal. It's a slimy game.
Well, I think it's technology, man. In my opinion, it's technology. I mean, you got all these people out there in the media. You got all these hungry media people trying to get after these guys. You got the Facebook, these stupid guys going to parties, posting pictures of their parties that, like, really? Did you really go to that party and here, there, and you're in college, and you see all this crap in the background, and you know the NCAA is snooping, you know other colleges are trying to get your team in trouble. You got Facebook, you got camera phones, you have TMZ, you have ESPN, you have CNN, you got everybody making money to break stories. This stuff is going to come out. This ain't back in the day when you don't have all this technology and you're able to track this stuff all the time and having all these sources with reliable evidence, you know, pictures. I mean, before you had to have a big old camera in your hand to take a picture. Nowadays, I can look like I'm talking on my phone and I'm snapping a picture of you here or there.
Right.
So it's always been happening. Now you just got a better, easier way of finding all this stuff out. And it's going to come out, man. And these guys are getting money. I just don't understand. If you're going to enter the draft, why would you take money just a few months before? I mean, why can't you wait after all this time, man?
What about the guy? I mean, he's a freshman and his family's struggling. He's a pretty good star on a college team, and he takes a little money.
I'm not mad at him.
From some source.
Paul, I'm not mad at him. I'm telling you, I'm not mad at him. If you caught me in that situation, I'm a freshman. I'm a little bit more naive anyways, being a young buck. I'm probably going to take that money. If my family's hurting for money, I'm hurting for money. And I can stop mom from sending me money. Mom, please, you don't have to send me money. Pay bills. I know you guys are struggling, this, that, and the other. I'm taking that money. I'm probably going to take that money, to be totally honest with you. You know, I may think about it down the line and say, man, this we got to stop this and this. But being a young, impressionable guy, probably would have taken that money if my family was hurting like that.
Now, the notion of a student athlete, is that the ultimate fallacy?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm kind of in between on that because, you know, I went to Furman. We had to hit the books, what have you. But nowadays, if you're in a high-profile school, you're a high-profile guy, they're bringing you in there to play football. They know you probably couldn't make it in. They're taking a little bit of a shortcuts to get you in the school. We want to win championships. This is a billion-dollar industry. I mean, it's a fallacy in some places. You can't say it's a fallacy when you're playing Ivy League football, when you're playing places like Vanderbilt, Stanford, places like that. Not to knock any other school that I hadn't mentioned, but you cannot call it a fallacy in those places. No way, no how. Those kids that go to those schools, they gotta get it in order to graduate, and those schools are going to give them great education. So I don't think it's a fallacy when it comes to – I don't think it's a complete fallacy. So I'm going to have go ahead and disagree with that.
Okay, now even when you have situations like Reggie Bush's situation and you have situations where a lot of times these guys aren't graduating, you still don't think it's – I understand what you're saying only when it comes to the Ivy League and comes to schools like Stanford and schools of that nature. Yes.
I don't think so. We see these cases, and it involves a high-profile player, and we want to go ahead and put it on everybody and generalize it and make it everybody. It's not everywhere all the time. But when it happens like this, it becomes major national news. That's all everybody want to talk about, of course. But that's not the case. I mean, you get people saying – all these NFL players are thugs because Pac-Man Jones is always in the news. I mean, right. I play with guys who never went out. I play with Brian Dawkins, and he never went out.
Mm-hmm.
He went home after work. I mean, that's just one example, you know, but he comes to mind immediately. He never went out. He got with his wife and little Brian and went home. I mean, we want to generalize and make it everybody. A few bad apples will screw it up for everybody else, and make it, you know, people believe what they read. Come on,
I can't believe what they read.
But I get what you're saying, but I kind of disagree with that because I think there are a ton of schools mid majors. And like I said, the Ivy League schools who just aren't that into the football. You know, they have a program. They might have a good program, good coaching, what have you. May put some players in the league, but it's not all about football in those programs. And in those cases, I mean, there are a lot of those cases. I'm going to say that's not the all in all. You know, those places, man, they get, you know, they have student athletes. They are the epitome of student athletes, and they put a lot of work in it, and they deserve to be called that.
So you're saying essentially, it's a media creation that we hear stories like Bush, and we hear stories like Pomsey, that alleged story. You hear all these stories, and we do tend to generalize once we hear all these stories. You're right.
Exactly. I'm not saying it's a media creation at all. I'm saying it's true to some extent, but it's not a complete fallacy. If I could change it and say that, that's what I want to say.
Okay. So percentage-wise, what would you say? Legitimate student-athletes. Let's focus on, like, basketball and football because those are the main money-making sports.
Out of all those athletes,
percentage-wise, which ones are legitimately student-athletes, percentage-wise?
I can't throw a number out there.
Okay.
Because
it's so many
schools and things you got to deal with when you're dealing you're going to have the McDonald's guys who are going to college for a year because they're going to the NBA. Why would you not leave early and go to the NBA? You're going to have those guys, right? And then you got the guy who was a star in high school, but he knows he's not the man. He knows he's a four-year player. He's getting a free education. Fine, I don't have to pay for school. I'm going to be a ball player, but I'm going to be a typical college student, study, have a lot of fun while I'm here, chase girls, because that's what you do when you're that age, but I'm a student. And I'm going to do everything all these other frat boys do, but I'm playing basketball, and you're going to see me on TV playing basketball. But that doesn't make me not a student athlete. If these regular student frat boys, just cats on campus, can hang out, party, go to class, and I can do the same thing. You're going to have to – and you're going to call them students, college students? You're going to have to call me a student athlete if I'm doing the same thing they're doing and I'm busting my butt also playing basketball or football.
Now, let me,
so I guess I'm defending my guys.
and rightfully so. I mean, you were a guy who's been there, and you have a level of experience. But let's look at this is a subject I'm kind of torn on. Should athletes get paid? Should you guys get paid?
Yeah,
the reason I'm torn on is because you are getting a full scholarship. Room and board is paid for. I mean, a guy like me, granted, I don't bring the type of money to a university like an athlete would bring, but I do bring some. I did bring some money to the university.
Hey.
I paid tuition. I brought some money there.
That's true.
The question is, should you guys get paid?
I think they should get paid. I'm not hating on these coaches, but it's just you got Nike coming in, you got Adidas coming in, Under Armour, who are paying the school a ton of money so they can put their advertisement on these athletes. The coach is making $4 million, $2-3 million a year, and the guys get nothing. Come on. You pack in the stadium. You are outfitting the campus with this football money. You are outfitting you are paying all the other small non-revenue sports bills with this money. Yo, give me a stipend. Yo, you don't have to pay me $1 million a year like I'm a professional athlete, but give me a stipend. You're selling my jersey. That kid's got on the Luther Broughton jersey, and I don't get nothing. I don't get a thing. Fine, that's cool, whatever. That's the way it was, but it could change. Especially with these guys sneaking out and getting money. Yeah, they're going to say, oh, these guys were sneaking out and getting money. He got $100,000. That's not the only case of guys getting money. Some guys are smarter. They take $1,000 a week. They take $5,000 over the summer, this, that, or the other. And they can get away with that without being seen as, man, this guy got so much money. How does he get this money? I remember him coming on campus with his parents. They were driving a jalopy. He didn't have any clothes, and now he's got all this cake. You know, these guys should get a stipend. I can tell you how much, this, that, or the other. That's going to have to be researched and put a plan in place, but they should get a stipend.
Now, I talked about this earlier. We're speaking with Luther Broughton, former Eagles, former Carolina Panthers tight end. Now, Luther, I talked about earlier in the show that this sounds like, to me, the ultimate pimp and prostitute relationship, where the pimp, which is the NCAA or the school, supplies the corner, which is the field, for the athlete to make them a bunch of money. What do you think about it?
I love it. I love it. I love that analogy. Love it. I totally agree with you.
And then that's all I
can say about that. I love it.
And with that being said, it's not fair. And you understand when guys like Reggie Bush it takes a little money. You understand it, and it's almost to me.
I understand it. You know, if he was smart, he could have got away with it. But I understand it.
Let's talk about the coaches here. I mean, Pete Carroll said that he didn't know that what was going on. Is that a lie?
Yeah, Pete knew what was going on, but you know what Pete is? Pete is the ultimate player's coach. Pete is the ultimate recruiter. That's how he got his guys in there. Yo, Pete is not going to throw his guys under the bus right now, especially with him having a reputation to uphold and also trying to save USC, you know, a little face. Yo, Pete is going to say what he has to say. And, you know, I guess I respect him a little bit for that because, you know, he could have thrown Reggie completely under the bus and saying, you know, Reggie did this. You know, this had nothing to do with staff, this, that, or the other. Reggie did this on his own. You know, Pete said, you know, he didn't know. Pete could have talked to Reggie and said, look, I'm not going to have anything to say about it, but, you know, I'm not going to throw you under the bus. So, you know,
Luther,
I'm cool with that.
Luther, we thank you for your thoughts, sir. You're
all
a friend to the show. Make sure you always come back, and we're always going to have you back.
I appreciate it, brother.
Thank you. You too. Well, you got the thoughts of Luther Broughton there, guy who's played college football and who's obviously played with a lot of athletes who have played Division I high-level college football. I mean, and Luther is saying that, I mean, if this is the exception in terms of the amount of money that Reggie Bush got, and, you know, that these guys really are student-athletes. I mean, I don't know. It's questionable to me, but he's saying these guys really are student-athletes. And on the surface, if you think about it, I mean, a guy does have to go to school on some level, does have to go to class on some level, you would think. And he also has to go to practice, and he also has to travel, and he also has to lift weights. So he does have a full commitment there in terms of the athletic side of things. In terms of the school side of things, I mean, you hope that a guy is really a student-athlete and doing the things necessary to be successful as a student-athlete. But, again, you know, when you hear stories like Reggie Bush, you start to question it a little bit. And but at the same time, I mean, I think he's a guy who's caught up in a bad situation, caught up in a bad system, and a system that forces guys to do illegal things to get money. I mean, the system unfortunately is set up for guys to break the rules. The rules are set up for guys to break them. I mean, they really are. And if you're coming from a bad situation, a tough situation, and you don't have the money, and you don't have all the things necessary to be successful outside of football, outside of basketball, if you're struggling financially, it is understandable for you to take a little money here and to take a little money there. It's understandable. But just like anything in life, the moment you get greedy is the moment that you get caught. So, I mean, I guess that's something you need to look at in life in general. I mean, the time that you get greedy is usually the time that you get caught. And then that's probably a part of what happened here. But let me get your thoughts on the numbers to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant. And you can send email messages to the show at goforit.gan@gmail.com. We have a caller. Hello, you're on Go For It.
Hi, this is Kenya from New York.
Kenya, welcome to the show.
How are you today?
Great.
Just wanted to touch a little bit on the situation that's going on with Reggie Bush.
What do you think? What's your thought?
You know, it's one of those unfortunate incidents, you know, that happens in life, you know. The thing that I'm wondering is, the gentleman who claims that Reggie took the money from him,
mm-hmm.
Why is he coming out now? Like, why is it, like, why
well,
is it not something that came out, you know, maybe in the beginning of the career or sometime in college? What is his benefit that is coming out at this point
in his
career?
What happened was the gentleman gave Reggie the money, allegedly gave Reggie the money, and a gentleman by the name of Lloyd Lake gave Reggie the money. And Lloyd Lake has been on record as saying that he would not have told on Reggie or ratted out Reggie or jumped on HBO or any other place to talk about it if Reggie would have gave him his money back. Reggie didn't give him his money back, allegedly. Now Lake decided to spill the beans. And it may cost Reggie his Heisman. It's cost him many of his records at Southern Cal. But, I mean, it's an unfortunate situation. But if, like Luther Broughton said, if Reggie would have just paid the man his money back, no one would have ever known. The man would have kept quiet, and life would have just went on.
Well, I do definitely agree with your first guest as far as him saying that, you know, they should try and develop some type of stipend so they don't have to fall into these problems on college campuses. Because, you know, in college, you know, everyone, you know, has an entitlement to work. And if, you know, if the players want, if that's their way of working, you know, then they should probably, you know, develop some type of stipend. But, you know, like you said, there's a lot of, you know, you have to go through a lot of different avenues in order to even bring that into real, you know, into reality. So
yeah, it's not as easy, I think, as everybody may think it is. I mean, you have to figure out what you're going to give the guys in terms of money and everything. And then you have the lower sports, maybe lacrosse and water polo that's on college campuses that are not bringing in the type of money that basketball and football are bringing in. So it's something that would be very hard to figure out, and something that it may come down the line at some point, but don't hold your breath. Thanks for the call.
All right.
Expected to be joined by 150-460-pound boxer, E.C. Smith, title contender. E.C. going to talk about his last fight against Fernando Guerrero. Controversial loss, controversial decision loss for him. A fight that many thought he won. I being one who thought he eked out the victory. Close, but I thought he got it done. I'm not saying the fight was a robbery. It wasn't a robbery, but it was a fight that I thought he won. I thought he got it done. But Ishii will come by, stop on by, and talk about it, and we'll get his thoughts and his insight and how he feels now and what's next for him. Well, where does he go from here? Where does Ishii go from here? What's the next stop for him? So that should be interesting to see what he says and get his thoughts on that. And if you have some thoughts and numbers to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant. And you can send email messages to the show at goforit.gant@gmail.com. That's goforit.gant@gmail.com. So Magic Johnson, another guy who recently came out and talking about the big three, kind of echoed Michael Jordan's comments in saying that, you know, he's a guy who probably would not have done what LeBron did in terms of going and taking his talents to South Beach. But, you know, it's interesting hearing everybody come out. I mean, you had Jordan come out. Jordan was saying that he's too much of a competitor. He's not a guy who was looking to play with Magic, looking to play with Bird. He was looking to beat these guys. And it's very interesting. Very interesting when you hear guys like Magic and Michael, elite guys in the game, guys who have won titles, guys who have done great things in basketball. It's interesting when these guys come out and say these things about what LeBron did and what Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade did, what these guys did by playing together and bringing this big three together. I mean, Charles Barkley said it all as well. You would think a guy like LeBron would try to stay in Cleveland and try to win it there and try to win it in his hometown. But maybe it's just not in his DNA. Maybe he's just not a guy who is comfortable being the man. And that's what he is. That's what he was in Cleveland. And that's I guess he's going to Dwayne Wade's team. So I guess it would be Dwayne Wade's team at this time when he moves on to Miami. I guess it would be Dwayne Wade's team. It's safe to say it probably is going to be D. Wade's team. If he does go, when he does play their first game, I mean, it's probably D-Wade's team. He's probably going to be the guy who will be taking the last shot and doing a lot of the things that he's going to be taking the last shot, definitely. D-Wade probably will be taking the last shot there for that ball club. And it should be interesting to see how it all shakes out and what happens there. But we're now joined by 154-pound, 160-pound contender, Ishii Smith. Ishii?
Yes, I'm here.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. Thanks for coming on to the show.
Oh, no worries, man. I love doing this stuff.
Now, Ishii, you went to Mississippi, the home of Fernando Guerrero's promotional company, Prize Fight Promotions, and Brian Young's ahead of that, knowing that this wasn't your promoter's card. And did you feel that the deck was stacked against you going
No, I didn't. I, you know, whenever you're an athlete, you just figure you'll get a fair shake, and that I wasn't worried about that. And I heard the rumors that he had fought there around 7 or 8 times or something like that, and that Randy Phillips had reffed a lot of his fights, and so had the judges judged a lot of his fights. But you don't worry about that stuff when you're an athlete. You just want to go out there and put on a good performance and put forth your best fight. You worry about that stuff and you're defeated before you even get out there.
Now, when you saw Randy Phillips, the referee in that fight, talking to Brian Young, the promoter, that had a prize fight promotions, did your mind start to change a little bit? Obviously, it's in the middle of the fight, but did your mind start to change a little bit? Have you ever seen something like that before?
Number one, I had never seen nothing like that in my 24 years of boxing. He stopped to talk to Brian Young, and I thought I was cut, or, you know, Guerrero was cut, or accidental headbutt. I thought there he was going to tell the judges something. For him to stop the fight to address Brian Young and then a minute later take a point was like, wow. And I was already calm and on edge through leading up to the fight, but when he started warning me for the low blows, that's when I was losing my cool, because I knew the precedent he was trying to set. I knew what he was trying to set for the fight, and it was getting, it was getting to me a little bit, because I had played it cool, and I just, like I said, he never came and talked to us. When you got a championship fight that's going to go on, whether it's a minor championship or a real championship, the ref always comes and talks to you, lets you know, the rules, what's going on, how he's going to ref the fight. He never came and talked to us. He never established before the fight, this punch is good, that's good, this is borderline. He never established that. So, I felt, after watching it, some of the blows did go low, but Guerrero hit me low a couple times too. And I was trying to work the body. But for a terrific fight like that to be overshadowed by the judging and, Randy Phillips is a shame, because Guerrero's a good kid. And, we put together a good, fantastic fight, and to have one judge score the fight 97-91, since he should never be allowed to judge again, and
yeah,
Randy Phillips should never be allowed to ref again.
Let's give that judge his name. I mean, he's definitely, Lewis Henry had scored the fight 97-91, gave you only one round.
One round. That's ridiculous.
It's bad for the sport. I mean, it's just not good for the sport. And you see it all the time, and unfortunately you see it a little too much.
Yeah, these judges just need to be held accountable, for their actions. I mean, that right there is, like you say, you see it all the time. But when you go out there, you lay it on the line, you leave your family for 2 months at a time, you're dieting, you're dedicating yourself, and to have this incompetent judge score a fight like that is just unbelievable. Unfortunately, like you said, you see it too much. You see it all the time.
Now, obviously, it seemed like you're watching the fight. Your game plan was to go to the body, and after you were warned by Randy Newman, do you think maybe in hindsight you probably should have been a little careful how you went to the body?
No, because, if you talk to the greats, Eddie Mustafa, my trainer, and, Mike McCollum, they will always tell you a good body puncher never stops doing what he does. And I stopped that. He for about 2.5 rounds, he got to me. I came to the corner and said, Coach, he's throwing my fight off. He's going to take a point. And my coach said, don't worry about that. So when I took those rounds off, it was nothing wrong, with me or anything. It's just I was, didn't know what the game plan that we had always worked on was throwing more body shots throughout. That's what my coach wants me to do, period, with all my opponents, is go to the body more, break them down. That's what we've worked on. And, I was like, man, he was throwing me off, and I was scared of losing a point. And then I came back, I think, at the seventh or the eighth. Or I think it was the seventh, and my coach was like, we need these last three rounds. And, it just kind of woke me up. And I was like, he's going to take a point. He's going to take a point. I think it was after he took a point where I was like, just forget it. I don't even care no more.
Now, you dropped him in the eighth. And when you dropped him, did you think at that point you could finish him?
No, because I knew it was a quick shot. It hit him right on top of the head, and he didn't look too hurt. And plus, I don't think I had a lot of time. But, you know, Randy Phillips wasn't even going to call that a knockdown. He looked over at the timekeeper, and that's why I was yelling at him, because he looked over at the timekeeper and saw they were counting. And then that's when he picked up the count, because he was not even going to call that a knockdown, because Guerrero was saying, like, no, I slipped. And it was clearly that he didn't slip. And so he was contemplating whether to count or not. And and so I was more worried. I was more complaining about him than I was worried about Guerrero at that time, because, like I said, he was just, he's one of those refs that just over-ref the fight. He just completely over-ref the fight.
And let's get that ref name again. That's Randy Phillips. And like you said, I mean, when you as a boxer, when you go out and dedicate yourself to your craft, and you work hard, you train hard, and you come in here, and it's bad enough you got to fight a tough kid like Fernando Guerrero, but now you're fighting you're fighting referee Randy Phillips, and you're fighting three judges and his whole promotional company.
Yeah, I accept 95-93, you know, his way. That one just scored that. I don't agree with it. I think I won the fight, but I will accept that, because you're dealing with human error. You know, rounds are close. I will accept a draw. But when you got two judges, 96-93, 97-91, it's like, really, with a terrific fight like that, what shot did I have other than knocking him out, especially 97-91? Like I said, no disrespect to Guerrero, because Guerrero's a great guy and a terrific young man, and, you know, we fought one hell of a fight. It's just unfortunate that a lot of this stuff is being overshadowed by really the performance that we put forth. But I do think I did enough to win. I can hold my head high and be proud. I think I did enough to get the decision.
And I thought you did enough to get the decision as well. I don't think it was a robbery. It wasn't a robbery, but I think you did enough to get the decision and to win that fight.
Yeah, exactly. It was a good fight.
Now, after two straight losses in the middleweight division, I've been reading where you're talking about going down to 154. Is that a definite?
Yeah, I'm not. You know, people are like, well, are you upset that you're being the gatekeeper? And I'm like, hold on, I'm not a gatekeeper at 160 pounds. It's, number one, it's not even my weight. You know, it's not even the weight that I fight at. I'm only going up here because these are the opportunities that are being presented to me, and this is what my advisor and my team has done, because we couldn't get fights at 54. We had Kasim Woma pulled out. We had some fights fall through, but by no means I don't think that I showed that I'm a gatekeeper at 160 pounds. I think for the most part, the last two fights, I've shown that I'm a threat at 160 pounds, and I've shown that once I go down to 154, I'm going to be a serious threat, because I'm going to take all that punching power and everything that I've learned and back down to that weight, and I've gotten better. You know, I'll be 32 this week tomorrow, and I've gotten I'm getting better. Every fight out, I'm getting better, and that's a blessing, and I owe that to God, man. I'm just getting better, and you can see the progress of, you know, that Eddie Mustafa is making. You know, 11-month layoff, and I didn't even know that till the telecast. Somebody told me, man, it didn't look like he was off 11 months, and when you look at me, it didn't look like I was off 11 months as well.
Yeah, like I said, you fought a winning fight, I thought. But and when you started to hear scorecards, what goes through your mind?
Well, when they said 97-91, I knew he had won. I mean, yeah, I'm not dumb. I know, you know, where I'm at, and it's a shame. You know, I wish the fight would have taken place in New Mexico, where it was initially. I don't have no fans out there. His promoter isn't based out there, and it would have been a neutral site. But when you hear those types of scores, it's very discouraging, because you go out there and you fight your heart out. But I'm upbeat. I've went up here and I've explored at of 160 pounds. I'm the only fighter that's went up three weight class and just haven't captured a belt yet. But I've shown that I'm. You know, I've never been hurt, never been down. A lot of people thought he was going to knock me out, and I keep telling people, I told people this is going to be my best performance of my career and that I was in tremendous shape. And as you can see, I put him down, had him hurt a couple times, and it was a terrific fight. And I'm just comfortable in my chin, and I'm going to be comfortable when I go back down to 154 pounds.
Now, you talked about this being one of your best training camps, and it showed. I mean, you really came on towards the end of the fight. Do you think that was a byproduct of that training camp that you had?
Yeah, I think so. You would have to say. And people still were saying, well, you hear this all the time. This is my best camp. And when I was saying it, I really meant it. It was a really, really good camp. And, you know, like I said, it was sparring with Floyd Mayweather, man, and being in that camp rejuvenated me and made me want to work hard and made me want to dedicate myself so much that when Chad Dawson, needed help to finish off his camp, I'm back in the gym already, sparring Chad Dawson, helping him get ready, finishing off his camp, getting him ready for Pascal. So, I mean, this is just a learning experience. I'm happy. I wish Guerrero the best, his team the best. They are good people, his coaching. You know, you can't fault them for anything that happened. But, you know, I wish them the best in the future. And, and I'm going to go down to 54 and look to make some noise there.
Now, it's interesting. You said you're right back sparring with Chad Dawson. How much time did you take off?
Man, I came back Saturday, and I got back Saturday evening. I spent saw my kids a little bit, and spent some time with them, and I was back in the gym. I think we sparred Tuesday. Yeah, so I only took off a few days.
Wow. I mean, this is a question I always want to ask a boxer. Coming off a fight, what kind of shape is your body in? Are you hurting? How much are you hurting? How much were you hurting after this fight?
Well, this fight and the Randall Bailey fight were the two toughest fights in my career. But this fight was just physically tough. It took so much out of me, and I don't know how Guerrero feels, but you know, this fight it took a lot out of me. You know, I couldn't even do much on Friday night. I just had to go in my room because it was such a war and such back to back, and probably the most punches I've taken in a fight. You know, and I knew it was going to be like that, and I trained for it to be like that. You know, I told Showtime a quote. I said I'm ready to go to war because that's what my friend Diego used to say. You know, I was like my friend Diego used to say, Diego Corrales, I'm ready to go to war. And I knew it was going to be that kind of fight. But after this fight, I was very, you know, this fight was my grueling and toughest fight of my career because it just took a toll on my body. But after a couple of days, I healed up pretty fast. I'm pretty much a fast healer because I don't do drugs, never done drugs, don't drink. And, you know, if you shoot your body right, your body will react for you. So that's why I was able to go back to the gym and spar Chad on Tuesday.
Now, we're talking to E.C. Smith, 154-pound, 160-pound contender. Now, you said you're going down to 154. Any plans for a next fight?
I would love to fight Angulo, anyone. Anyone that they seem fit, DBE, whatever God has in store for me, man, all my options are open. I'll fight anyone. And I think I've proven that throughout my career with all the undefeated guys I fought. You got an undefeated guy, Paul Wolak, who I beat. It was his only loss, who's getting ready to look like fight Chavez. So, I'll fight anyone. It doesn't matter to me, man. I'm just, right now in my career, I feel like I know I'm getting better, and I just want to put on crowd-pleasing fan fights to have people talking about it. You know, it's Wednesday of the next week, and people are still discussing the fight that happened on Friday. And that's when you know as an athlete you've done your job. If you got people talking days after the fact.
And yes, it was a crowd-pleasing fight, definitely. Now, you talked about your birthday. You're about to turn 32. Your birthday's when? Tomorrow?
Yeah, Thursday. Yep, tomorrow.
Well, any big plans? Any big parties lined up for
this week?
32nd birthday?
This weekend, I think we're going to do something in collaboration with Vitamin Water, who's one of my key sponsors, who's been sponsoring my career for a very long time, and much thanks to Curtis and those guys at Vitamin Water. And I think we're going to do something this weekend out at the pool, and tomorrow I'm just going to kick back with my family and spend time with my kids, man, and just enjoy the being alive another year, man. It's truly a blessing.
So, Ishii, can I get the invite?
Yeah, man. You definitely got the invite, man.
Sounds like a popping and hopping party out there. You got the water and everything. You got vitamin water sponsoring it. Man, it sounds like a great party.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a good time, man. Good time.
Well, Ishii, first off, happy birthday. We hope you have a great birthday. And make sure you come on back, Ishii, when you're playing that next fight, and we'll talk about it.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys, for having me again. I appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us, sir, and good luck with the rest of your career.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Ishii Smith. Man, it was a great fight that he had this past weekend. And, I mean, it was a fight that unfortunately was marred by some questionable scorecards. And, again, in the sport of boxing, unfortunately, you see that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 too many times. And you hope that they can do something to avoid that from happening in the future. But, again, it's a shady game, unfortunately. It's a shady business, and shady things tend to happen. So we've got another 4 minutes left in the show. I mean, let me give you out the number, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. That's blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. And you can send email messages to the show at goforit.gant@gmail.com. That's goforit.gant@gmail.com. About 3 minutes left in the show. And Ishii Smith, we definitely thank you for joining us and stopping by and giving his thoughts on that last fight that he had. And then speaking of fights, unfortunately, is a fight that we haven't seen or may not be seeing anytime soon. That's Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao. It's a fight that everyone wants to see. It's a fight that needs to get done, but unfortunately, it's a fight that won't be getting done anytime soon. And you wish that maybe guys could come together and get that fight done. Because there's a lot of money to be made. It's just too much money to be made. And you wish that with all that money out there to be made, that these guys would come together and get this done. It's good. It would be great for the sport of boxing, which could always use a shot in the arm. Could always use a shot in the arm. And unfortunately, as the way things are going right now, looks like we won't be seeing that fight any time soon. And also, Philadelphia Phillies, big Phillies fan. A lot of our listeners are in the Philadelphia area. Right now, that's a team who's struggling big time, coming out the break, lost 3 out of 4 to the Cubs, and lost the first two games of their series against the St. Louis Cardinals. Lost Jamie Moyer. He was injured yesterday, elbow strain. And right now they're a team that may be looking at Roy Oswalt, pitcher for the Houston Astros, a guy who would definitely help the rotation. But they're saying now Oswalt's demands may prevent that from happening. He wants his contract in 2012 guaranteed. He's expected to make $16 million. He wants that guaranteed in 2012. And some teams are balking at that. So we'll see what happens there. But, I mean, if you're a Phillies, you have to do something. Or maybe you just let this ride out now and just come back next year. Better team. I mean, right now, a lot of injuries. Chase Utley missing a lot of time. Jay Happ missing time. J-Roll, Jimmy Rollins missed some time. So all these guys have missed time, significant amount of time. And at this point, maybe it's just one of those years where everything that can go wrong is going wrong. And that may be the case for the 2010 Philadelphia Phillies. About another 45 seconds left. We want to thank Ishii Smith for stopping by and talking about his fight. We also want to thank a friend to the show, Luther Broughton, former Eagles, former Carolina Panthers tight end, for stopping by and giving his insight on this Reggie Bush and collegiate athletes getting paid. And we want to thank everybody for listening and everybody for calling. Make sure you listen to some past shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgan. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgan, where you can listen to some past shows. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you listened. I enjoyed it. Always enjoy it.